Welcome back to the Casey Adams Show. Today we are joined by Michael Noikos. Thank you so much for coming to the show, Michael.
No worries. Thanks for having me, Casey.
So you came here. You're from Australia.
Correct.
We're currently in Los Angeles. How long have you been in the States so far?
So I've been in the States for about 2 weeks now, and I've still got another 2 or 3 weeks to go, just exploring something new. Haven't been here for about since I was 10 years old. So
love it.
Yeah.
Very cool. Yeah. So you're born and raised in Australia.
Correct.
You've been in the online, social media, digital marketing world for quite some time now. For people that may not know and may not be familiar with you and your story, talk us through at a high level, like where you spend your time business-wise before we really dive in.
Yeah, so business-wise, and I'll definitely talk about this later as well, a lot of my time is really just spent, I'd say, managing a team, because when you start a business just as a sole person, well, my primary company right now that I run, it's myself and a business partner. When you start out, we bootstrapped it. So it's everything. You need to learn all the skills. You need to learn how to do marketing. You need to learn how to do sales. You need to learn how to do operations. You need to learn how to do finances. You need to learn how to do human resources, work with contractors, manage your bank account. I mean, the list goes on and on and on, right?
Yeah.
So when you start out, it's really just about learning all these skills just so you can understand how to actually have a business that really is positive in cash flow.
But yeah.
Especially if you're bootstrapping, it doesn't really work if you start up a business burning money every single week, right? So yeah, it's really about just starting, you know, when you get started, just to make sure you have that jack of all trades kind of skill set. But then I guess the wonderful thing about once you do actually start a business and get it to the stage where it's more passive, if you want to use that terminology, you can actually start to hire people to, you know, delegate off different tasks. So you can actually, as a business owner, a founder, CEO, whatever you'd like to call yourself, you can then actually work more on the business rather than in the business. And a lot of that is really just about human communication at the end of the day to people that have an appropriate skill set for what you need them to do within your company.
Yeah, absolutely. It's so great. I mean, people, especially when I started my entrepreneurial career, right? It's, you know, it's quite, I like to say it's kind of the opposite of what is glorified in social media, right? Especially like the passive income, like everything.
Yeah.
There's going to be an active portion of it. Of course, there's so many different areas of where you can spend time and generate income. But, you know, it's like being an entrepreneur, you have to not only be a jack of all trades, but in the earliest phases of what you're doing, you got to do everything. You got to do marketing, you got to do sales, you got to do hiring, you got to, if you're raising capital, you got to be, you know, the CEO that's fundraising.
Yeah.
It's understanding all these different elements of the business. And of course, there's so much great books out there, mentors out there they can learn from, but going through that process yourself, as you're saying, it's, you got to go through it. So where did this entrepreneurial journey begin for you? You're born and raised in Australia.
Correct.
Where did you come from, like an entrepreneurial family? Or?
Yeah, that's a good question. So actually, initially, I went to school and just, you know, normal high school. And I was really good at just math and physics and all of those really nerdy school topics, if you want to call it that. So I was a real big math geek. Like, I was a kid that would finish work early in class. Like, you'd have an hour long class, 10 minutes, I'm done everything. And I go to the teacher and I say, I'm done. What now? And he says, oh, I don't know. That's it for today. So I'd end up like going around literally, it's quite funny, helping the other kids with their work. Because to me, just numbers and math and all of that nerdy stuff, it just came real natural to me. So naturally I thought, okay, well, I know when I'm a bit older, I'll need to make money. How do I do that?
Where did that thought come from, right? Like you're in high school. You're like, oh, I gotta make money. Business, or going to find a job. Like, were you in the environment of, in a family environment that was like, hey, careers prioritize and held at a high degree, or what did that look like?
Yeah, certainly. So it's actually interesting. So my father owned a real estate company in Australia. So that was commission only, performance driven. And it's interesting because I guess I probably would have started a business from when I was 17 or 18, or maybe taken over my dad's. But it's interesting because I was very shy when I was in high school, which isn't surprising when you're a bit of a math nerd. So yeah, I was quite shy when I was in high school. So I never ever thought I would be the type of person to be a business owner. I just thought, oh, I'll get a job. I'll work my way up the ranks. I'll just 9-to-5 job, you know, and find some form of engineering firm because that's a degree I had. And yeah, but things definitely took a change. So when I was 18, it was my first year of university. And one of my friends was just showing me around something to do with like dropshipping. Back, this is 10 years ago now. Wow. This is when dropshipping was the big hot thing.
Yeah.
And he was, in fact, I remember it. He drove up to my house and he pulled up and he said, oh, come outside. And I come outside and there's this big flash new like BMW out there. And I'm going, whose car is this? And then my friend stepped out and I was like, what's this? Like, you were driving a $200 like bucket of bolts before. Like, what's going on here, right? And he said, I need to show you this thing. So it was drop shipping. He showed me how he was selling. I can't remember what it was. But then, yeah, long story short, after that, I went, hang on, you're making like more money in 1 week than I'd make in 1 month once I finished this degree in about 5 years. Am I doing the right thing here, like continuing my engineering degree, or should I maybe look at this online money thing? Because to me, at least then, it was quite new.
Yeah, you know, 10 years ago, you said, right?
Like, yeah, 10 years ago.
In a sense?
Sorry?
2013?
Yeah, around 2013, yeah. So I was just thinking, I've never even heard, I didn't know you can make money online. Because 10 years ago,
yeah,
I mean, smartphones were pretty much brand new almost. I mean, if you think about it that way.
Yeah.
So yeah, that started my first entrepreneurial endeavor where I was selling, it was just a little Shopify store. I did, you know, drop shipping, Alibaba. I custom ordered. My friend was a good photographer, so I like designed these little fashion bracelet thingies. Got them off Alibaba for 50 cents a unit, sold them for $40 a unit. And yeah, it was
great.
Yeah. And it was actually highly profitable. And yeah, that was my very first online business. And yeah, I was making about, I'd say $2,000 a week from that in profit.
Wow.
at university.
That's great.
And yeah, that was crazy. But then because it was primarily off Amazon and it was the first ever business I'd run, it was just a quick success and I'd never encountered one roadblock.
Yeah.
And
you know, rare.
Yeah, it was rare and it was lucky. But what happened is I essentially had Amazon like shut down my store, right? And then because someone had put up a bad review and we dug and it turned out it was some competitor and I got all frustrated and I gave up. And that was the end of it. I thought, oh, well, I made a bit of money, back to engineering. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty much what I did for the next, I don't know the timeline exactly, but maybe 4 years or something until I actually gave online business another crack. And this was,
wow. So you dabbled, found something, dropshipping at the time. You went in and you made some money. Something happened, store gets shut down, and you're still in school. So you sort of just put it to the side and said, all right, I'm going to go spend my time and effort and back in school.
Yeah.
Well, that was fun. Made some money, but obviously, I mean, I love that too because, I mean, you hear so many stories, it's like good or bad, right? Of people finding something, either dropping out or pursuing it. Sometimes it works and it's the Mark Zuckerberg, Mark Zuckerberg story. But most time, like 99% of startups fail. And that's challenging and that's real. But to know, like, to have that self-awareness of, like, what makes sense for me right now to go back, I love that because I think it's so common, you hear, especially on podcasts, people come in and say, oh, yeah, I found this thing, dropped out, and now I'm here. It's like, no, like, there's normal people out there that want to try different things, that want to get a skill set or test, I like to say. And it seems like you went in there, you tested it out, you got this newfound skill and knowledge, and you went back to what you know best and what you wanted to spend time on. Is that right?
Yeah, correct. So, yeah, that was, for whatever reason, now looking back, I mean, I was a lot younger then. I might have been 19 or 20 years old. So I, at least compared to now at 27, that was just, I was stupid. Like, I should have, now going back, I would have been like, hang on, this works. It's just a small, tiny problem. I mean, that tiny problem compared to issues I face day in, day out today running my current company, it was just so microscopic. But, you know, you live and you learn. So, yeah, that was what I did for about 3 years after that, I just kind of kept going on doing whatever, dabbling a little bit here and there, because I knew, oh, I did make that money a while ago, didn't I? I should try something else. And I probably gave about, I'd say 10 different online business models a solid crack. I gave MLM a crack, although that's not online. That did not work. I wasted a lot of money. I mean, I know it works as a model, but just as I mentioned, I was quite still shy at that time. So MLM, multi-level network marketing, whatever you want to call it, you need to be quite confident, you know, approaching everyone. So that wasn't really the best fit for me, I guess you could say at the time. I tried affiliate marketing, rank and renting websites, blogs, YouTube channels, things like that. And some of them, you know, they made a little bit of money, but once again, just because I was still, I wasn't truly in it to win it. I hadn't like burnt the boats, if you want to say it. So when I came across any issues, I just too hard gave up.
Yeah.
And now, obviously, because I'm a full-time entrepreneur now, business owner, I would never be employed again in my life. I know that for a fact. But I guess it does take some time to get to that point, because all of these other businesses I was running, small ones, you know, say maybe they'd make, over 3 months of running it, maybe 10,000, 15,000. If you're needing to pay a mortgage and rent and car payments, groceries, all of that adult stuff, that's not enough, in my opinion. But when you're at uni and it's just spending money, or college as you call it here in America, I was like, this works.
I can
party off this, you know. This is enough for Saturday night type thing. So that was essentially that. And then, eventually I did graduate with, you know, all the top marks from college. I had 7 years worth from
engineering. You were in college for 7 years.
Engineering and economics, because I suppose I did. Somewhere in the back of my mind, I was like, oh, I do like business, but it just kind of all fell.
Well, you fell in love. You were saying engineering. What in that? Not software engineering or
mechanical.
Mechanical.
Yeah.
Got it. I figured. What was it about engineering that? I mean, I know you said, no, math, science.
Yeah,
as you said, like the nerdy topic, which I don't think so at all. What about mechanical engineering? And I'm curious, in terms of like where you're spending time today, do you utilize anything that you learned in school, or how has that degree served you in terms of where you spend your time today?
So in terms of what I did at university, at the end of the day, engineering and even like finance, economics, it's just applied problem solving. So the one thing I learned at college, which I think is, you hear a lot of people say, oh, college is a waste of time, it's pointless, like a lot of entrepreneurs that go out there and say this and that. And I mean, they're correct to a point from my perspective. However, I believe that once you, it depends what you, I guess, do at college, right? Say, if you're just learning about the history of English, maybe that's not going to help you in the real world, right?
Yeah.
But when you've got a degree, say, in the professions industry, I think you learn a lot of problem solving, how to solve problems, and a lot of human interaction. Because at the end of the day, if you get paid money to do anything, it's usually, unless you're scamming, which I hope no one does, it's because you're providing value to someone, right? And you need to communicate with humans to understand what sort of value, or communicate with the market in general to understand what type of value that they actually want to be given. And you can see if you can fill that void in the market, be it with a one-on-one service or more of a systematically constructed service, which is closer to what I do now in my current company. I think the problem-solving element is huge because you just learn. I mean, I did get pretty good at Excel spreadsheets, but no, mostly problem-solving. Definitely.
It's spot on. I mean, I didn't go to college for context. I started my first business when I was 16.
Oh, wow.
Just a marketing agency doing Facebook advertising for businesses in Virginia, where I'm from, on the East Coast. And I ended up not going to college. And, you know, throughout the years, I'm 23 now. And I look back, and am I satisfied with my decision? Absolutely, in terms of not going to college.
Yeah.
But I also think there's such an element of, like, if I went to college coming out of high school with the mindset I had in terms of wanting to pursue a business and all the things they wanted, I know looking back, if I did that, I would have had the biggest regret of not doing what has led me to where I am today. But now when I kind of flip the script and I say, okay, if I was to go to college today, like I am someone that embodies just being a lifelong learner. Mm. And I think it is with everything, right? Like, what are your intentions with classes, right? Like, I know so many, friends of mine that went, they party their ass off, they leave and they're like, okay, what's next? Like, I didn't really plan myself. I didn't really sit down and say like, this is why I want to be here. And I kind of just use it as this vacation and I'm dead and I don't even know what I want yet. And not to say you need to know exactly then, but just the ability to sit down and pursue things, right? Like I was listening to this podcast this morning and throughout the weekend with Tony Robbins and just momentum in any area of your life, whether that's working out in a business, in a relationship, or a new hobby, like that momentum. And you kind of talked about it, right? Like you were following the momentum, drop shipping, and then you stopped the momentum. Yeah. And you get to look back and say like, oh, like what if I followed that momentum? And I think all of us have that in some sense of like different avenues of life, positive or negative momentum. But for you, take me back to like when you're starting your current company now and you graduating university, where did you begin to build momentum in your life?
Yeah.
Across the board from how you view the world from physical component of how you work out, we were talking about before, to also business.
Yeah, awesome question. So I guess first, before that, you mentioned about Tony Robbins. And yeah, I actually did go to one of his live events in Sydney, Australia.
I want to go so bad. I want to go throughout the years.
They're awesome. The firewalk he does, I don't mean to plug him here, but
we're trying to get Tony on the show, so go on, Tony.
Yeah, well, no, thank you, Tony, for the firewalk. That was probably one of the most life-changing experiences because, as I mentioned earlier, I used to be super shy and not really in my show, you know.
And what about that? Like, walk us through that experience from your perspective. Firewalk, then the event. Because again, I was just listening to this podcast, and something that I want to hear from your perspective now is this idea of immersion. Talking to the host, Theo Vaughn, actually, just to plug the show. He was talking to Theo and saying, you know, it's people that come to these events. It's one thing to see like clips on social media or watch my talks, but for real change to happen, like you need to fully immerse yourself. And those 4 days of, I think it's 12 hours a day or something
longer,
very extensive, that immersion is what creates
change.
As you said, change. So for you, like walk us through that. You said it was the most transformative time in your life.
Yeah, definitely. It was literally just a turning point. At that stage, I was still at university when I went to Tony Robbins. I just felt like this was shortly after the dropshipping thing. And I was like, what am I doing with my life? I'm just at uni. I wasn't really in the best physical shape. I was just didn't have many great relationships in my life at that time. And I was just thinking, like, what am I doing with myself, right? And it just really took, I guess, just some big change and, you know, like maybe a cathartic moment, if you want to call it that, to really make yourself realize, oh, I'm not where I want to be, and I've got certain goals and aspirations and desires. So what do I need to do to take me from this current point of pain, if you want to call it, push myself to pleasure? And yeah, you're right. It really is just about immersing yourself into something. And I think with the firewalk that he does, it's just about, I remember it was, I walked up to it, to the fire, that is, the stones. It was maybe 20 foot, 30 foot long. About 15 meters, so that's what, 45, 50 feet, roughly.
Wait, how long again? Sorry.
About 15 meters, which is, I'd say 50 foot. And I remember walking up to it. Just as I walked up to it, they stopped me and they said, hang on, the coals are getting cold. Let me just put the whole one on. And I just stood there. I was like, oh, my God. And I remember.
At this moment, are you fearful? Oh, your mind?
My God. I'm thinking, I'm going to burn my feet. I'm not going to be able to walk again. How am I going to do this? And I remember I just froze. And then the person behind me just said, go, 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 go. And I just thought, fuck it. I'm going to go, right?
Yeah.
So I just walked through it, and it was the best feeling of my life when I finished. I remember like the heart rate, it was like 200 BPM. I was like, oh, this is awesome. And I remember going, I want to do this again. And I ran straight back.
Oh, man.
Did it once, two more times. Yeah.
Wow.
It was, yeah. And yeah, it just really changes. And I was on like no sleep at this stage as well, because I'd come from couple of flights and I hadn't slept the night before. And it was just like, I felt so alive after doing that. Yeah.
Wow. So I've always been so curious about the fire walk specifically. Like, are you dipping your feet in something before? Is it burning when you're walking across? Like, what is that sensation?
Yeah, it's burning when you're walking across.
You don't feel it. Like, you're walking on fire, obviously.
Yeah.
But it's tolerable.
It's hot. Imagine if you stood there without walking, you'd definitely burn yourself. But the trick was, I still remember this. It was just, don't stop.
Cut
keep
the motion.
Keep walking, constant motion, and you'll be fine.
Wow.
It hurts, but you'll be fine.
Wow. Very cool.
Yeah.
So just to go back to the last question, momentum. So this seems like an event in your life where, you know, you're seeking change, you're seeking momentum. What changed after that event for you?
Oh, well, everything. I mean, after that, that's when one thing I decided to do was definitely take fitness a whole lot more seriously and I was at uni and bored, essentially, and also take, these online businesses more seriously. And that's when I did find a few models that worked for a little bit, as I mentioned a bit earlier. I think the biggest thing it did for me certainly was change my perspective on life. It made me a positive thinker and think a lot deeper about being very intentional about certain actions you take and realizing, okay, this action I take today, sure, it might give me short-term pleasure, but what's the potential drawbacks, right? Mm-hmm. Because everyone in this world, well, I'm sure most people, they want to be successful and they want internal fulfillment. And it's different for different people, right? Some people it's money, some people it's friends, some people it's romantic relationships, some people it might be being famous, whatever it might be to each person. At the end of the day, they want fulfillment, like internal fulfillment. It's just really about thinking, okay, what can I do day to day to get me to that point, right? And yeah, but just taking in those small things, it really does help you actually lead a life where you're more intentional about what you do so that you do get that desired outcome rather than just drifting through, which is what I just felt like I was drifting through life before, I guess you could say, that turning point. And I guess moving on to now how I did start my current business and how that all started. So
yeah, tell us more about the business where you spend time today.
Yeah. So there were a few different businesses in between, some where I was making maybe $5,000 a month, a couple where I was making 20, which was pretty good. But what really changed was I was at engineering. So as I mentioned earlier, I was doing engineering for about 7 years at uni, got a job. It was a reasonable job, right? I would have been 25 at the time, I think, 24 or 25 years old when I had my first 9-to-5 kill me now job. And it was just a basic job. I was just working a lot with spreadsheets at an engineering company that contracted to the Australian government, just doing jobs for them here and there to do the mechanical engineering. And it was boring, right? It was really boring. I remember it was a lot of spreadsheets and supervising like people that were doing labor. So early mornings, you'd have to sometimes wake up at 5 a.m. to get to a particular job site. And, you know, your day didn't start even though you had to drive 2.5 hours. You weren't paid for that transit, right?
Yeah.
So sometimes it'd be waking up at 5 a.m., going and getting there at, say, 8 a.m., working, driving back, it would be 7 p.m. and then finding the time to still, you know, I was trying to hit the gym very hard at this stage, you know, gym and still have a social life and actually something outside of work. But it was just not the place for me. I was there for about 18 months. And I remember every month I was getting more and more and more depressed, right? So I just thought, I need to focus. Nothing in my life matters right now. I know I don't want to do this anymore because essentially all of my online businesses I had at that stage, COVID, long story short, took them all from doing maybe 5K or 10K, 15K a month to zero. Just because most of them were to do with like e-commerce of some kind. So I was like, gosh, I don't have any way now that I know of to make money online. Like, I guess I need to do this engineering job.
Mm-hmm.
And it just got more and more and more depressing each and every single day. Same thing. I remember I'd wake up and I'd just think, oh, not another day,
yeah,
right? Not another day. And I just knew that's not, no one should live their life thinking that, you know. All I did, the only day I looked forward to was Saturday night where I could go to the bar and get drunk,
yeah,
right? And maybe when I had enough energy, go to the gym. Because by this stage, when the university had ended, I was in incredible shape. I was at like 8% body fat.
And wow.
I literally had like an 8-pack and I was doing like 30 chin-ups in a row.
Oh, man.
500-pound deadlifts, all of that stuff. What? Shout out to Kino Body. Thanks for helping me there. but yeah, so it was, that just went downhill because I had no energy, no motivation. And I remember just looking back thinking, what have I done? Like, I used to be so fulfilled and happy and had a drive, but now it's just gone. And I guess it's because I knew I had that personality type now. I was a bit more extroverted. I thought, I want something more than this. Like, this will kill me. Just...
Yeah, you're unfulfilled.
Extraordinarily unfulfilled, yeah. Yeah, so that really... What really happened is after that, I was still all my spare time. I had maybe 3 hours spare time per day. I was a remote salesperson. So I worked for another company after my engineering job. Wow. I'd get home, dinner, gym. Then from about 9 p.m. or 8 p.m. till about midnight, every single day, except for maybe Saturday, I'd be on the phone taking sales calls to sell various products for different people. So I learned how to do phone type sales, high ticket, if you want to call it that, for products for maybe $2,000, $5,000, $10,000, right?
Yep.
And whenever I make a sale, I get a commission.
Yep.
So in working with this company, that's when I actually learned, okay, this is how because I was just a salesperson, but I saw, okay, they've got a finance department.
Mm-hmm.
They've got a marketing department. They've got a sales department, which I was a part of. They've got an operational department. They've got all these different departments, because before that, every business I'd run was just a one-man show, just me, maybe a virtual assistant, right?
Yep.
But then I saw into what it looks like when you're working at a company. They were maybe doing $100,000 a month, maybe $150,000 a month, something like that, which, you know, it was enough where they actually had a team.
Yeah.
So that's when I got really involved. I remember during my lunch break at work, I'd be like calling up the people that work there as well, just trying to absorb as much information and learn as much as possible, right? And I was, I guess through doing that, one of the owners of that company at the time, he's now my current business partner in back management.
Oh, that's incredible.
Which is my current company where we do millions a month, right? And essentially, so I met him and formed a bit of a business professional friendship relationship with him. And then he parted ways from that company and we started, Banks Management now about 2 years ago.
Lovely.
Yeah.
So, and what is Banks Management for people that may not know?
Yeah. So it's a management agency, where we essentially help, primarily females just monetize themselves online, be it through Instagram or other, you know, subscription-based services or TikTok, pretty much any form of monetization online from we do focus primarily, I'd say 98% of our clients are female.
Yep.
That's just the nature of social media, really. So that pretty much what we do. We help a lot of these models earn extra income, be it $1,000 extra a month or $10,000 extra a month. And we usually take 50%. So of their earnings online for helping manage them and market them, whatever it might be that they do. So, that's really how me and my business partner, Fletcher, how we started this whole business. So we just started with one client.
Yeah, I was going to say, just for context. So, like, you know, social media management, all these different platforms, monetizing on social, it's different than, you know, phone sales or drop shipping.
Oh, there.
Did you and your partner have a background, or not, I shouldn't say background, but what was the learning curve there of, you know, all things social and understanding monetization, the different platforms? What background look like in that? And what led you guys to wanting to start a business in that vertical?
Yeah. So I guess saw a gap in the market, that's for sure. But yeah, we were both very experienced at this stage in dropshipping, SMMA type thing, like very confident running Facebook ads, YouTube ads. I'd done a lot of copywriting. So although I was a salesperson over the phone, sales is just really, you know, trying to sell something as it is. You're trying to sell usually one-on-one. Copywriting, it's usually trying to sell one person to writing the copy, and you can easily distribute that to many people, right? So I had all of these fundamental skills after working in dropshipping, blog writing, direct sales over the phone, cold calling. That was fun.
Learn a lot through that.
Affiliate marketing, ranking and renting websites, SEO, SMMA. Like, I've done a lot of different models online. Some worked well, some didn't work well for me. Not that the verticals don't work, just for whatever reason, I didn't get it to work at that time. But yeah, we essentially found a gap in the market where we realized, hang on. So it's because, like, I was watching a lot of podcasts about men's self-help and, you know, dating for men, all of this. At the time when I started the business, I was single. And I was just always really interested in, you know, I went to Tony Robbins' self-development.
Yeah.
And, you know, you just look at a lot of different things when you're really looking how to maximize your life to get maximum fulfillment. So I thought, you know, like, if you look at the dating market, for example, it doesn't take a genius, let's say, to work out that usually men are the ones that are more struggling in the modern dating marketplace. Maybe if you ask your parents or your grandparents for people at our age, it might have been the other way around from what I've heard, where women were usually pursuing men. But now, as I'm sure we all know watching this, it's the other way around. Like, women get attention on Instagram. If you log into any girl's account that's remotely attractive, she'll probably have 3, 4, 5, 10, 50, 100 new DMs a day. I remember looking at one of my cousin's Tinder accounts. She had about 500 matches per day.
Oh,
and then at the time you compared it to mine, I had 2. And I was like, So you really start to, I guess we saw that there was this gap in the market, right? And platforms like OnlyFans at this stage were starting to take off, right? So we thought, you know what, we know that there's this demand for this service where men, they usually just want to speak to women or feel some kind of connection, typically with just someone, because unfortunately they just can't get it in real life. Like, if you look at the statistics, I think based off collating like billions of data points from Tinder and Hinge and Bumble, all of those dating apps, when the big data people at those companies look at it, they've noticed, and it's quite a crazy stat. I believe it's 10% of the men match with 90% of the women. So then the other 90% of men, if you want to use a 1 to 10 scale, if you say you're an 8.5 out of 10 male, sorry, your only option is a 1 out of 10 girl. And that's really, unfortunately, how the online dating space works. In person, maybe it's a bit less extreme of a skew. But yeah, it's very interesting when you see stats like that.
Wow.
And then you go, wow, like, this is, if I want to, I guess, you know, most men, if you're straight, you do want a nice girl. You don't want some demanding, nagging person that doesn't take care of themselves, doesn't care about you, doesn't care about them.
Especially like high value men that...
Well, yes. I don't want to use that word, but...
Of course.
But it,
Of course. I mean, it's... Right, it's like you attract who you are, right? If you're someone that doesn't work out, someone that doesn't take like educating themselves seriously, that isn't pursuing your career, not to say that a partner needs to be all those things exactly, but someone that is in alignment with becoming their best self, right? And however people want to take that, spot on, right? It's and you're speaking to the data in this context, but it's real. I think too, like my perspective, like Jacqueline, who you just met, like we're newly engaged 6 months ago now, and we started dating 4 years ago almost, and I have really like no dating app experience.
Oh yeah, so you would have been
well over that.
You would have been what, 19 at the time?
Dude.
Yeah.
And
I guess touching on that, it's interesting. I've seen what dating apps are like when, say, I don't like using this word, but it's just the easiest way to explain it. A low value man versus a high value man.
Yeah.
You know, say you're putting up pictures where you're you don't present yourself that well. You're a bit fat. Your pictures don't look that great. It doesn't look like you've got anything exciting going on. Yeah. Versus your picture, you're standing there. You've got a big, I don't know, maybe a cigar in your mouth, enjoying life. A lot of friends, family around you, the supercar behind you. Maybe a picture at the beach, shredded six pack. It's you're assured on
all the checkpoints.
Yeah, pretty much. The experience on the dating app, it goes from one match a day if you're lucky to 100 matches a day. You're like, oh wow, is this what it feels like to be a girl? You know? But yeah, no, that's unfortunately it's just really the plight of the majority. I mean 90% of men, basically.
Yeah.
If you want to be empirical about it.
I mean, it's like with anything on social too, right? Like great hooks in a video, get attention.
Yeah.
Great hooks in a dating app, get attention.
Yeah.
It's true across the board. Like what story are you telling about yourself? Like how are you magnifying what matters in your life? And also just, looking at the playing field of like, hey, what works, what doesn't?
Yeah, certainly. And yeah, I guess, that one thing about that I'd noticed personally what the difference was in that. And I was thinking, unfortunately, most men, they don't do all of this work on themselves. They don't think about self-development. They don't think about the gym. They don't think about their finances. They don't think about their relationship. They don't think about how can I actually take decisive action or direct intentional action each and every single day to get me one step closer or 1% closer to my goal. However, you'd like to think about that. So, I mean, just going around, I notice most men don't do that. And most men, they're probably struggling. I'd heard about, say, OnlyFans is making this much money and this much money. And I was thinking, and my business partner, we were talking about it, and this is how it kind of started. We were thinking, okay, I mean, there are a lot of men out there that clearly struggle. We know why OnlyFans, as an example, works, like why so many men spend so much money on that platform, which I've seen through my own eyes. It's crazy.
Sure.
And yeah, so we thought, well, we've done drop shipping. At the time, we were doing part-time work consulting for companies doing 30 million or above in turnover e-commerce, helping them expand their marketing department. So me and my business partner, we were very experienced in marketing and sales.
Mm-hmm.
So we thought, well, we can just provide this marketing and sales service to models that are looking to make money online, because everyone's trying to make money online nowadays. It's becoming more and more and more popular compared to 5-10 years ago. It's quite rare to say, oh, I make money from XYZ online avenue, whereas now today it's more very common. Yeah,
totally. And so your business partner, now you were working at a sales position inside of his company. How did that relationship change over the years of being someone that's working inside of the sales organization to making the phone calls at your lunch break to learn more about the business, to then building a relationship with your now business partner? Talk us through how that evolution happened.
Yeah, so it was really just, as I mentioned, I was really more interested. It was quite interesting than his employees in the back end that were not commission based.
Yeah.
I was more interested in learning how the business ran, because I guess now looking back, in the back of my mind, I was thinking, I don't want to do this engineering thing anymore.
Yeah.
12 hours a day, including transit, dinner, gym. And I'm only making, at the time, I was making 90,000 Australian per year, which is about, I think, 60,000 USD, a bit over 1,000 a week before taxes.
Yeah.
So after that, I would have been taking home way less than 1,000 US a week for 12 hours work a day. After going to uni for 7 years, I'm thinking, what have I gotten myself into here? This is torture. This is hell, right? So I was just thinking, I need to get out of this. So anything I could do, it was my only focus. It was literally, after about 3 months of working engineering, I went, this ain't for me.
Yeah.
So that next year, I was just learning, making an extra few thousand dollars from being a commission-based salesperson on the side as well. Learning. And I guess through all of that, a lot of my communication was with my current business partner, and we just got along really well. And we both eventually, actually, it was quite funny, we both moved to the same city we lived on different sides of Australia.
Okay.
I wanted to change. He wanted to change. We both moved to the same city. And then we just started seeing each other most days, working closer.
Yeah.
And yeah, before you knew it, we just started this business and
wow.
Yeah, went from generating when we were just helping manage our own models. The first month we were doing, this is nearly 2 years ago now, so I can't remember exactly. In our first month, we were maybe pulling in about 15 grand a month. In our second, we pulled in about 45. In our third, we were doing well in excess over 100 grand a month in profit, USD.
Yeah.
That's pretty much how our company started. It was exponential momentum. Yeah, because we very quickly, it was the only thing I focused on. I remember I'd wake up, I'd sit at my laptop, my ass would be there except to eat food and go to the gym.
Yeah.
And that's what it was like starting up a company for the first 9 months. Yeah.
I wanted to say throughout the conversation, we've talked about whether that's being a high value man, going to the gym. You said before the show that you were in the world of bodybuilding. What is your experience like, especially as someone that's been, was in school for 7 years, been in and out of different jobs to then starting a company?
How has health played a part in your
life, and how has working out and that structure changed over time?
Yeah.
And even today, how you spend your time in that department.
Yeah, the discipline, it's huge, right? It really teaches you hard work, and how to stick at something, because it's not fun going to the gym sometimes. Like, I feel so guilty if I'd say, okay, I'm going to the gym. Different people have different opinions on how often you need to gym. I'm not a fitness expert, so I won't get into that.
Yeah.
But I usually like going 5 times a week, right? Even if I don't need to for like the physical health, I find it's good for my mind,
Yeah.
Like, I like spending 90 minutes a day in the gym, 2 days off, so I don't kill myself.
All right.
Like, burn myself into the ground. It's essentially just, it teaches you so much about, personal discipline, hard work, and just sticking to a goal and no matter what, not giving up. Like, there would be times where, say, I was working really hard, I'll look at the clock and before you knew it, I went, oh wow, it's 2 a.m. Oh, I haven't gone to the gym yet. Well, I'll hate myself if I don't go. So I just shut the laptop, whatever I'm doing, I can do it later, I can do it tomorrow, it's not that important. Put on my gym clothes, drive to the gym. I'm the only person in the gym because it's, 2 a.m.
Yeah.
And just get my workout done. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's just, and doing that, it started there, and then transitioning that or translating it over into more of a financial perspective of this, be disciplined, just do it.
Totally.
Yeah.
Love that.
Very, very beneficial. And yeah, it gives you more energy. I'll notice if I don't gym, like right now traveling, I maybe can gym 3 times a week. It's just been a little bit difficult. I'd like to still do 5. I'm trying.
Yeah.
I even notice if I say take 3 days off in a row from the gym, my energy levels go down.
Yeah.
Which is
absolutely
interesting because you expend energy, but it kind of gives you this kind of artificial energy, even though you're expending calories.
Absolutely.
It's interesting. Yeah.
I love that perspective, man. I mean, I think to just my background for context, growing up, I played a lot of sports, hockey, lacrosse, football, and being an athlete all my life, I've always had, I don't want to say the most discipline in that category, but you understand the importance of it for your mind or obviously your body, but also the connections and relationships you can build through that process with others, right? And I wanted to reference something too, because when I was a sophomore in high school, I got injured playing football. I was in a neck brace for 6 months, paralyzed. And I saw it.
That's actually
here.
Yeah, no, that
is that from.
Yeah, so it's unfortunately, and this is one big thing about hard work, I suppose. So, and just how it's so important, your mindset. Like, it's crucial to be successful, whether you want to make millions of dollars a year or whether you want to, whatever you want to do.
Yeah.
Not everyone wants money. I like money.
Yeah.
But not everyone, has that deep desire to be wealthy. I would have been 20 years old at the time. I'd been taking the gym seriously for maybe about a year at this stage. So before I started, I remember I was at university and it was the first time someone made a suggestion to me. They said, okay, Michael, you need to hit the gym, because I'm trying to calculate from kilograms to pounds. I would have been 51, 52 kilograms, which is about, I think, 110, 115 pounds.
Yes.
And I had a gut at 5'10". Yeah. So, you know, I was average height. 5'10", that's about average height. And I had a gut, but I was 110 pounds. So my arms, it was the same size from my wrist off at my biceps, right? Like, and I was, but then I had this big gut. Like, I didn't look good, right? And I think that was just due to diet or something, for whatever reason, genetics, whatever it might be. I just didn't look tremendously good. And I thought, well, you know, I went to a single sex school when I was in high school. So females were never on my mind.
Yeah.
Then I went to college and I was like, oh, it's a whole nother world, right?
Yeah.
And I was like,
I don't think this serious.
Yeah, I need to take... Well, it was for me. I need to look good, you know, for multiple reasons.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I started that. And, yeah, I was so weak. I couldn't even bench press the bar, which is the 45 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
I remember, like...
Yeah.
Oh, too hard. Like, I could maybe get 5 reps out of just the bar. It was pretty embarrassing, right?
Hey, we all start somewhere.
Yeah, we do.
That's the beauty of it.
And, yeah, and it got to that point. And after about a year, I'd built myself up to doing... I explicitly remember this. It was a 90-kilogram bench press. For one rep, I hit it, and I was ecstatic. 90 kilograms, it's about 200 pounds.
Okay.
In fact, I think it's right around 200 pounds.
Okay.
So, yeah, I remember hitting that for one rep, and, you know, that had been about a year and a half after not even being able to do the barbell.
Wow.
So I was so happy with myself, right? And my body looked a lot better, of course. And, yeah, the night after that, I went to a bit of a, like a... high school reunion type thing, 2 years reunion, blah blah blah. Long story short, there was a bit of an accident. I got pushed off a roof and landed on my arm.
No way.
Yeah,
it's off a roof.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, no, this roof
would have been about 8 foot, so not super high. It was a low roof, but still.
What happened? I mean, for people that are watching, you can see.
Your
bicep
goes up to here.
Shoulder to your bottom of your bicep.
Yeah, it goes up to about here. And yeah, so when I landed like this. So when I stood up, the bone was...
You're joking.
No.
What?
Yeah. So... It hurt a little bit, that's safe to say, but yeah.
Wait, you're telling me you saw your bone sticking out of your arm?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
What happened from that moment?
I was wearing a long sleeve shirt, and I remember seeing the bone sticking through the shirt.
That makes me...
yeah, oh, I've told this story a few times now, but yeah, so that happened, and yeah, long story short, I was in hospital for about 2 months from what I recall. And yeah, when I came out, I was in even worse condition than when I initially started the gym. And I remember I just thought, oh, I hate how I look again. I got all depressed again because, you know, I'd lost all my progress and all of this. And I went totally against the surgeon's warning. He said, don't you dare lift any weights for a year. Don't do it
year. What was to you, and I relate in a different context, but like I was in a neck brace for 6 months.
Not fun.
And that led to, I was diagnosed with interspinous ligament damage. And I, more than the injury, but like the mental aspect for me, I was so depressed. This is when I was 16, depressed, hated life, angry, pissed off, all that stuff. Could never play football again. And it was like this injury that changed the course of my life. So for you, how old were you again when this happened?
20 or 21.
21, 21. You're in the hospital for 2 months. Hey, what was that process like of recovery? And I mean, this is obviously, you know, when you say bone stick out of your arm, this isn't a serious injury.
Okay.
How did that affect the mental aspect of who you are and how you live your life?
It was terrible. It was terrible. So I was in hospital for 2 months, and I wasn't allowed to drive for another 6 months after that, because if I crashed, apparently it was because I'm unable to operate a vehicle.
Yeah.
That's what apparently happened. So I couldn't drive, couldn't go anywhere, couldn't see anyone. It was very bad for the mental state. And yeah, I was just like, I'm so depressed. I need to hit the gym. I need to hit the gym. So I thought, I don't care what this surgeon says. What does he know, right? So I ended up hitting the weights again. It was going all right. But yeah, one day I remember just going, I was building it up and I got back to maybe 70 kilos, which is about 160 pounds on the bench press after once again having to restart with the bar. And yeah, just something happened. My arm went. And yeah, ever since then, even though right now I'm a lot heavier, I weigh about, oh, in pounds, I'm trying to think, I think 180.
Okay.
180 pounds. I still can't even bench what I was benching when I was 21 before this happened because my shoulder.
As you should it.
Yeah. It's unfortunate because it's really, and you know, it's like, it's just one thing where I go, you know, there's two, I could have taken two different paths. I could have gone, what was me? This thing happened to me. Oh, well, I'm just going to not hit the gym, not try and just be fat and lazy. I'm going to be a victim. Who the fuck wants to be a victim, right? Like, seriously. I could have done that and just been depressed and miserable, gotten fat, be like, oh, I don't need money anymore. Who cares, right? But the alternative is, okay, I've got a setback, but still, I've still got an arm. Even though it fucking kills to do a bench press, even today, every single time I load up the bar with more than, say, 80 kilos, 170 pounds, something like that, whatever the conversion is, I just go, fuck it, you know, push through. It's for a greater good, right? And I had to, like, alter my workouts and things where it's like, I need to do a lot of one-arm stuff because even two-arm,
I feel that.
I feel, like, more movement from this side, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I just got to alter my workout. And, you know, someone else out there, no injuries, better genetics, they might only need to train 30 minutes a day and they're, you know, perfect, incredible, easy progress every week. With me, because of this, I need to train usually twice as long, anything upper body.
Yeah.
Like, I can do one-arm chin-ups with this arm. This one, I'll never be able to do it.
And, so what was, I mean, I feel you. I mean, Diego and I, right, were working out every day and there's so many movements that I, my neck can do kind of like stem to my shoulders and to the side a lot. And it restricts me. And it's annoying. I've sort of let myself feel restricted because I know that if I push it, something seriously could be wrong. And I don't want to mess around with the spine. And even with your arm, right? If you can prevent an injury, like, prevention is the best.
Yes.
strategy.
Yeah.
But for you, like, how has it affected your life today? Like, do you have full mobility in your arms outside of like bench press and trying to do the weight?
Yeah.
Outside of in the gym, how has it affected your day to day?
Yeah. So up until about 2 or 3 years ago, I felt it day to day, but now it has been about 7 or 8 years since this happened.
Okay.
About 7 years. So yeah, it took about 4 years for a full day to day recovery.
Wow. 4 years.
I remember for the first two years, I would have been like, oh, I'm sorry. One year. Like, it was at that level for about 2 years.
Yeah.
So
I didn't ask. So how did you fall from this 8-foot rooftop?
Oh, I got pushed by someone, unfortunately.
Wow.
Yeah.
Someone. Did you know this person?
Yeah, it was just someone I went to high school with. They were just, unfortunately, just not in a...
Man.
They were in a bad state of mind, and they just took it out on other people, and I was one of them, unfortunately.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is rough, man. I mean... It's crazy. I mean, speaking of like Tony Robbins, right? It's like so many great things in life stem from massive setbacks.
Oh yeah, does it ever. And I mean,
most of the time,
you know, that and you know, the reason, like, setbacks are a good thing in my opinion. I'm happy for the fact that in certain areas I've had to struggle immensely, right? Like, because before this happened, I was maybe going to the gym 2-3 times a week. After it happened, I was going, once I was able to kind of get out of bed, I went to the gym every single day. I did not care what else was happening. I would be at the gym, you know, no excuses type thing. And sometimes setbacks give you that extra desire and ambition and all that. And, you know, after that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I thought, you know, oh, there's no way I could ever get an 8-pack and be like I was living the bodybuilder lifestyle kind of after that. And I never think I would have been in that shape if a setback never happened, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, it's interesting. Always, whenever a setback happens, I never think, oh, why did this have to happen to me? I think, okay, what positive thing can I take from this? You know, like, for example, so many bad things happened, like, with right before we started this current company that I run, Banks Management. It's like, for whatever reason, the sales thing stopped working, and my engineering job, I was just like, nah, I quit, can't do this anymore. And I could have been like, oh, I don't have a job, I don't have any side income, like, this is terrible. But in reality, that setback was the fuel required to propel things. Like, up until this point, I hadn't had a business that was doing more than, I'd never been making more than 20 grand a month, right? But then after this, now, you know, there are some days I'm making 20 grand.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, more. And it's like, yeah, it's just sometimes setbacks, you need a bit of a setback to really slingshot you to what you need to do. Yeah.
Absolutely.
And it's just about, really, really pushing through that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I
love that. I mean, there's beauty in the pain, right?
Like, yeah. I like
story.
I like pain. I like pressure. I like stress after that, because I know that, you know, diamonds are formed from pressure, right?
Yeah. So absolutely. That's a gnarly story, man.
Yeah.
I'm so glad to hear that you're recovered and you can
Thank you.
Do all things. Yeah, I mean, injuries, it's just, you know, it reminds you, right? Even for me, when I remember someone that is now I get to consider a friend, a friend of mine, his name is Nick Santostasso. He actually has opened up for Tony Robbins. He's one of the best speakers I've ever seen. But he was born with no legs in one arm.
Fuck.
And I remember, like, as we were getting to know each other, well, it was first I saw him speak at an event, and then I got to meet him afterwards. And I remember, like, that, and so to this day, like, that occurrence, and if I'm ever thinking, you know, and if
something,
I'm not living in gratitude for whatever reason, like, Nick has left such an imprint on me that it's just a snap, and I'm like, I have so much to grip.
Yeah, honestly, I think anyone born, and I'm not going to apologize to anyone for saying this, I think anyone born in a Western country, or a first world, or even a second world country, if you can speak English and you have access to the internet, I personally think there's no excuse for, you know, these days we hear about cost of living and this financial and, everyone's running out of money. I don't see why, because if you just apply yourself and you're dedicated and you're disciplined, there's no reason why with the internet, I mean, it's freaky. Like, at my age, 27-year-olds aren't meant to be making millions of dollars a month. They're really not. They're just not. But because of the internet, I mean, it's just changed how everything works, and anyone can do it. I know 18-year-olds that are making this sort of money as well. Like, it's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I agree, right? It's like you're living in a country where there's opportunities and there's so much to learn. It's
anywhere with the internet.
And it's hindering you is you in the day. And it's the background and where you come from. And yeah, I remember being in a small town in Virginia. I grew up, didn't fly on an airplane until I bought the ticket myself.
Yeah.
It's like having that, you know, relatability with someone out there. That's why, like, content and social media can be so powerful.
Yeah.
As much as it can be, you know, I hate when people say, like, social media is only so negative, because
it depends how you curate.
I think Tony Robbins said on this podcast, it's so prevalent in my mind now, he's like, there's always going to be room in the world to focus on the negative,
of course,
things that are going wrong, right? Like, he said, you know, 40 years ago, 50 years ago, if you see a plane crash happen in this, like, random country that's devastating, you don't hear about it, because it's
not,
you won't. But if you're waking up and you're following these, like, plane crash, killing, like, murders, all the negative things that are happening that will continue to happen, that's just how the world will be. But if you focus on that and let that derail you and stop you from doing things or prevent you from, like, living and seeing the other perspective of all the good things happening in the world, or how you can create the good things, like, you're doing yourself a disservice. And a lot of people don't even recognize that, because they're not an environment for to be able to see the positive.
Yeah.
I think that it stems back to that self-awareness of, of finding the right information, because at the end of the day, you know, people sometimes they're not searching for the great information. They're just allowing information to be bestowed upon them, and they're not controlling what's being, you know, inputted into their mind, into their brain, into their activities.
Yeah. And it's so true, because naturally, I mean, I believe in, I guess, science, obviously, given my background in engineering, you kind of have to.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. And you know, all right, a million years ago, there's a reason people focus on the negative, because you had to focus on negative to survive. I mean, humans, we might not be a million years old, but back 10,000 years ago, let's say, you'd need to be like, okay, there's a tiger chasing me. I need to survive. So your mind's always looking for negative, and it wasn't focusing on positive.
Yeah.
And then 10,000 years, it's not really that long for the, you know, the brain to develop. So people still today, they always focus on the negative, and it's, you need to train yourself. Like it's active, but sometimes you just got to train yourself. If you're feeling negative, just got to go, hang on, what am I doing? Like right now, I mean, I'm healthy. I've got money. It's not like I'm diagnosed with cancer or anything. Like no matter what's happening, it can't be that bad. Right. I mean, maybe if you've got a terminal illness, like, yeah, that's pretty bad. But you know, you need to actively trick your brain into thinking in that positive way. But most people, they just don't. And that's why there is a bell curve, you know. Not everyone is created equal. If everyone was pulled back into an equal body, everyone's magically 5'10", everyone's magically, I mean, sounds a bit strange, but okay, 50% of the population, men, 50% of women, you're all 5'10", you all have this much money, you all live in an identical house. Give it 10 years, the only difference will be people's mindsets, and the world will revert to how it is now.
Yeah.
Where different people are higher and different people are lower.
Yeah.
And yeah, it all fundamentally, it does come back to your mindset, because I've seen myself, I guess, using finances as a measuring stick, how my mindset was in times where, like, having a lot of money doesn't make me positive, but being positive helps me make a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes sense. So it's like a one-way correlation.
Yeah. No,
yeah.
Love that. Last question before we wrap up here, Michael. I'm going to go on and on.
Yeah.
There's so much depth to dive into, but you've talked a lot about, you know, personal development, and obviously throughout your journey, you've had many defining moments of transformation, of injury. What's been some of the best advice that you've received over the years that you want to share with the audience today?
You're putting me on the spot here. I think it's just, you always need to have a goal, like a goal or a vision, just something to push towards. Like with me, for example, and I'm never going to change. I remember when I was at college and I had no purpose, no drive. I was just going through, taking my lecture, passing my test, whatever. If someone was like, oh, I want to go to the beach for a couple of days and just hang out, yeah, that's awesome. But now I'd be like, hang on, if I just do this, like, how am I bettering myself, be it physically or mentally or financially or spiritually or relationships? It's like now, you know, my brain, it's running 24/7, and it's always thinking about what can I do? Like, to some people, if they say, oh, I want to spend a day at the beach and just sit there and do nothing, to some people, that's the best day ever. Yeah. To me, that's torture, you know? And it's like, sometimes I think you need that type of mindset shift or kind of paradigm worldview to be someone. I mean, I'm sure a lot of your viewers are entrepreneurs or entrepreneurially inclined. I'm sure they, you know, I think if you want to be financially successful, by the way, I think that's a great thing.
Yeah.
I hate people that try and put a negative stick on money. Money's just an amplifier.
Yeah.
If you're positive, you'll be more positive. Like, I've been able to donate to more charities and all of that, you know, and help more people. I'm not stingy, you know. It's like, compared to if I had $100 in my bank, I'd have to be stingy, you know. So yeah, I think money's an awesome thing as long as you use it properly. And but yeah, part of that and a part of being successful is, just, you know, having that perspective when you wake up. Okay, what can I do today so that when I go to bed, I know I'm one step better than 16 hours ago, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I love that, Michael. Before we wrap up here, I want to give you the opportunity for the audience to know, where's the best place for everyone to follow you, to stay connected with you, just to learn more about everything that you have going on in your life?
Yeah, for sure. So you can follow me on YouTube. It's just search Michael Noikos. And Instagram is Michael Noikos, no spaces. Pretty easy one to remember. And for my company, Banks Management, it's just Instagram, Banks, B-A-N-X, Management, or MGMT for short. So BANXMGMT. Yeah.
Easy. I'll be sure to link it all down below.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you.
Easy. Well, Michael, I just want to say thank you so much for taking the time to come on the show today. Hope you have the rest of your trip here in the U.S. Hope it's a great time. And for everyone watching or listening, make sure you go follow Michael, check out everything he has going on. I'll be sure to link it down below. And once again, thank you so much for tuning into the show.